Today is Monday, April 17th. We're going to work on fluid electrolyte balance and exam 4 review material. All right, so on page 123, let's talk about overhydration or hydration. There's actually a hypertonic hydration. There's a hypotonic hydration. But we're not going to really worry about hypertonic hydration because it's rare for someone to have that particular imbalance. We are, however, going to focus on hypotonic hydration or overhydration. Another name for this problem is water intoxication, and it's kind of like being drowned in your own fluids. So with this particular problem, a person may have normal sodium levels. So where is sodium normally found? Inside your cells or outside your cells? Outside, right. So you may have normal sodium levels. The problem is a person may have too many fluids in their body, and that fluid will promote an imbalance there. And the imbalance actually gives you too few sodium ions for the water that you've got. So the sodium may have started out looking normal, but it may become hyponatremia because of excess fluids in the body. So now you see where we're going with this. If you have too little sodium in your bloodstream, which pressure do we primarily lower? We lower osmotic. And the alternate thing is, if you're lowering the osmotic pressure and you have too many fluids, which pressure do you actually raise? Hydrostatic, right. So this particular imbalance comes from having too many fluids. That creates a lower osmotic pressure, and by default here creates excess fluids or high hydrostatic pressure rather. So why do you think ADH and aldosterone are inhibited when you've got too many fluids? What looks normal to your kidneys? Yeah, blood pressure, water volume, exactly. So your kidneys, of course, release renin. What does renin target? Yeah, turns on aldosterone, right? So if your blood pressure and your blood volume look okay, there is no need for ADH and aldosterone to be secreted. So what happens to all the fluid being filtered through your kidneys? Gone. Yep, it's flushed out in the urine. So unfortunately, being overhydrated means that urine output increases. So we put these two hormones to rest and we simply flush the fluids out of our system. Well, that actually makes the whole process even worse because you may be losing sodium as well as water, and that may further increase the problem of hyponatremia. In plain English, what is hyponatremia? Low sodium. Yep, low sodium. So another side issue with this particular problem is proteins can leak from the bloodstream out into the interstitial space. They should be picked up by which alternate system? Lymphatic, right. And so if they don't get picked up, there is a further worsening of which blood pressure, osmotic or hydrostatic? Osmotic, yeah, makes that even worse. Okay, so can you think of a scenario where a person may put themselves into a hypotonic hydration setup?
Exercising on a hot day where you sweat out too much sodium and you replenish too much water.
Great. Good. So exercise on a hot day, sweat out a bunch of your fluids and electrolytes. And the problem is if you replenish with only water, you're not getting the balance back of the electrolytes and the water. So why would Gatorade be a better choice on a hot day? Yeah, got your solutes in there, got your electrolytes in there. So especially if you're drinking a lot of dilute fluids like water over a short period of time, what is the filtration rate for your kidneys? Good, 120 mLs per minute, right. So if you're drinking lots of dilute fluids over a short period of time, your kidneys only filter but so fast. So unfortunately, this fluid can travel into a lot of your tissue spaces, including your brain. This can lead to cerebral edema, and it can shove the brain down into the opening in the foramen magnum and kill a person. So hypotonic hydration is a very dangerous scenario to set up. Drinking a lot of dilute fluids over a short time period when you need the electrolytes is one way to set this up. You've probably heard this story before, but about, six, 7 years ago it's been in California, they had a contest called Hold Your Wii for the Nintendo Wii, and they had all these people come out to the radio station and drink gallons of water. And they had a nurse call into the radio station and say, you know, hey, what you're doing is really dangerous. You could end up killing people. And they said, nah, it's okay. We've had somebody look at the contest, and it's all right. And they actually dismissed her and kind of like made fun of her and laughed at her. Well, there was a 28-year-old mother of three who went home, did not win the contest, nor did she win the Nintendo Wii console, but she had drunk a whole lot of water over a short period of time. She called her mom and she said, I've got a really awful headache, and she lay down on the sofa and died. So, what happened to her? What happened to the fluids?
They went into her interstitial space.
Good. They went into the interstitial space and those tissues, and since the fluids were hypotonic, what happened to her cells? They swell. Yeah, exactly. So, had they treated this immediately, well, if they'd never done it in the first place, right? But if they did it, they could have treated it immediately with what type of IV drip? Saline, yeah, get some salt in there. How would that have helped her? Dry it out. Yep, so what area would you tap into first? Interstitial fluid. It'll pull that area first into the bloodstream, and then second, it would have pulled fluids from what compartment? Intracellular. You'd pull it from the cells. So eventually we would start drying out those compartments and hopefully, you know, her brain as well. So I just wanted to make the point that hypotonic hydration is a form of overhydration, and it is just like hypotonic dehydration in that we are imbalancing fluids and electrolytes in the same way. It's just that we're doing too much fluid instead of losing the salt or the protein from the bloodstream. So the end result is the same. You end up having bloated, swollen cells from a case of hypotonic hydration or overhydration. So we're not going to work through overhydration with salt. That's an unusual case. That's rare. So we'll stick for our four scenarios: isotonic dehydration, hypotonic dehydration, hypertonic dehydration, and then our one and only case of overhydration there. Okay, so what I'd like to do is make sure you've had an opportunity to work through some of those practice problems. Did you all work through any there on pages 124, 125? Okay, why don't we start with the ones on page 124 since they have no answers. Let me give you a couple of minutes to work as far along as you can on page 124. If you want to check your answers with a seatmate, you're welcome to. I'll give you about 5 minutes to work as far along as you can, and then I'll get you back together for some answers on that page. Okay. Question number two talks about drinking salt water. And the issue here with salt water is that we've got too much salt to balance the amount of fluid that we've got in our bloodstream. So let me put it to you this way. If you've got this much salt in your bloodstream and this much water in your bloodstream, if I'm drinking salt water, I now have this much salt in my bloodstream. I didn't change the overall volume of water. It's the ratio of salt to water that I changed. So, in effect, I gained salt and I lost water. Does that make sense? Okay? So, sure. If normal is this, this much salt and this much water, if I'm drinking salt water, I've now increased my salt by this. So now I've got this huge imbalance where I've got an increase in salt, but I've also decreased the amount of water that I've got relative to that salt. It's all about a balance that we're talking here. So I've effectively lowered my water or my BHP because of all this input of salt. So in this question, your number two, the salt water is actually going to cause us to lose BHP. Now, knowing that, what type of dehydration do we have?
Hypertonic
dehydration. Good. So we've got the pressure, we've named the problem, and can you tell me the way the fluids are going to move? Coming out of the cells, right. So with hypertonic dehydration, we move fluids first from the interstitial space, and then we tap into the intracellular compartment. So do your cells bloat or shrivel in this situation?
Shrivel.
They shrivel, exactly. So ultimately, this person loses fluids, they lose them in their urine, and the person becomes, honest to goodness, shriveled and dehydrated. Okay, so by the way, the clue is in the last sentence there. Seawater causes hypernatremia, which is excess sodium, and loss of fluids. All right, so how about questions on number two? Let's try number three. Number three talks about excessive diarrhea with loss of solutes and proteins. That's what I need to know. If we're losing solutes and proteins, I know that I'm having a type of dehydration. This one is what form? Hypotonic, yeah. So we know loss of proteins and solutes deals with loss of blood osmotic pressure. That BOP is what drives the fluid loss from the body, or rather from the cell, from the bloodstream into the cells, I should say. That BOP issue is going to cause edema in the interstitial space and then swelling in the cells. So when you hear about vomiting and diarrhea, that's probably the last thing you think about is swollen cells and tissues. But in fact, if it is extensive and we create an imbalance where we lose salts and proteins, that's what happens as fluid moves from the capillaries into the interstitial space first and then out there into those cells. Did you try that one on your own? Okay, how'd you do with number three? Do okay? Let's try number four. Number four talks about an extensive hemorrhage. Hemorrhage is bleeding, it's loss of blood. And there's only about 2.5 liters of fluid in our bloodstream, but the biggest issue here is the proteins that are lost when we bleed. So notice the clue there for number four, loss of blood proteins. Which pressure is primarily influenced?
BOP,
good. So if you lose BOP, are you primarily affecting your ability to filter or your ability to reabsorb?
Reabsorb,
good. So can you describe for me the fluid movement when we have a hemorrhage? Good, move it from the bloodstream to the interstitial fluid, and from the interstitial fluid, if it's hypotonic, it can go right into the intracellular compartment. So in fact, cells may swell when a person is bleeding due to this imbalance of proteins and of course the fluids. They may, because if you're bleeding and you're losing them, they may in fact continue to decline or drop as you're heading toward that venule end of the capillary. But yeah, I mean, it depends on if your liver can keep up, I assume, with making proteins, which it's probably not going to. Let's talk about number five. This one, once again, is a loss of proteins. We know that when proteins do escape the vessel or the capillary, they should be picked up by your lymphatic system. Those proteins should then return to your heart for blood flow. That's the ideal situation. So with number five, if you have a lymphatic obstruction, that means you're unable to pull those proteins into the lymphatic system. So where do they stay? Interstitial fluid. That's unfortunate because now they're trapped outside your capillary and they can't get back into blood flow. So which pressure is primarily affected here? BOP, good. Since we lose BOP, are we not able to filter or not able to reabsorb? Cannot reabsorb, good. So the fluids are moved first from the capillary into the interstitial space. And from the interstitial space, where?
Intracellular.
Right. So do cells shrivel or bloat in this situation? They bloat. Do you have any questions on numbers 2, 3, 4, 5? Any of those so far? Let's see, 3, 4, and 5 are all,
yes.
Yeah. All right, check out number 6. This one is loss of fluids. Which pressure is primarily lost?
Hydrostatic,
BHP. So is this hypotonic or hypertonic dehydration? Hypertonic, good. Can you describe for me the way the fluids will be affected? Okay, so if you lose the ability to push, the fluids are pulled first from your interstitial space, and then that area becomes hypertonic, we then pull the area inside your cell. So overall, what happens to the size and shape of your cell? Shrivels, right. By the way, either form of diabetes, mellitus or insipidus, is going to experience a loss of fluids. So the cells shrivel in either situation. Both forms of diabetes lead to hypertonic dehydration. Number 7, what type of dehydration is hyponatremia? Loss of sodium is hypotonic. Okay, so which pressure do we lose? BOP, good. So is our issue primarily inability to filter or reabsorb? Can't reabsorb, so the fluids are pushed out. What compartment do we first influence? Interstitial, right, the IF. And then that fluid compartment becomes swollen with edema, and we next start pushing fluids into the cell. So what happens to our cells? They bloat and swell, good. How about questions so far on any of these? Is this making sense so far? Okay. So number 8's a little different. This one says we have high blood pressure. And in parentheses it says high blood pressure will actually create an imbalance where you have lower levels of sodium in relation to the amount of blood volume that you've got. Let's think about this in terms of big picture. Blood pressure is the same thing as hydrostatic pressure, right? So if you have high blood pressure, it's the same thing as saying you have high hydrostatic pressure. And that gives you, going back to our balance again, that gives you way too much water for the salt that you've got in your bloodstream. So which pressure do you have too little of?
BOP.
Yeah, so you've got too much fluid here for the little bit of salt to balance it. So in effect, for number 8, we lose BOP. Is this hyper or hypotonic dehydration?
Hypo.
Hypo, good. And finally, can you tell me how the fluids are going to move? Good. From the plasma to the interstitial fluid to the intracellular compartment. So what happens to cells?
They bloat.
They bloat. Good. If you haven't yet completed numbers 9 and 10, let me give you a moment to jot those down. We are. Yeah, we're doing this at 9:30 and 11. You're welcome to come. Okay, so for number 9, you'll notice we have a hypertonic drip, which results in a loss of fluids. And I know that doesn't make sense because the drip is giving you fluids. It's just that they are too salty for the balance. So this is a highly salty drip, so you're actually losing fluids in relation to the amount of sodium that you're getting. Okay. So, with that understanding, loss of fluids relative to the sodium, what type of pressure do you lose here? Loss of fluids?
BHP.
Good. And what type of dehydration is this?
Hypertonic.
Good. So, with this particular situation, if you're losing fluids and you're losing the push pressure, how do fluids travel? Back in from your intracellular to your interstitial,
into the plasma.
Into the plasma, right. So you eventually lose that as it flows back into the bloodstream. Okay. How about any questions on number nine?
So in number nine, would you say that's a hypernatremic situation?
You could say it's hypernatremic, yeah. Number 10 is a kidney inflammation issue. It's called glomerulonephritis. And with this one, use the clue that says it's a loss of proteins. And if we're losing proteins, which pressure do we lose?
BOP,
good. So our ability to reabsorb those fluids is now decreased. What type of dehydration do we have?
Hypotonic,
good. So into what fluid compartment do we tap into and start pulling fluids first?
Interstitial.
Yeah, from the
plasma.
Push it into the interstitial, you're right.
Intracellular.
And then intracellular last. So in this case, what happens to our cells?
Bloat.
They bloat. Good. So if you'd like to try the next set on page 125, there are answers on the bottom of that page. And it looks like we'll have Wednesday to complete those if you do have questions. What I would like to do is take you back to the beginning of this chapter and just hit those first couple of pages there. Let's see, that takes us back to page 118. Okay, so on page 118, just a review here of fluid compartments. We've already talked about these. Back in Bio 210, you probably learned that the majority of our fluids are stored in which compartment?
Intracellular.
Okay, so that is, of course, inside your cells. Around 2/3 or 66% is stored inside your cells. The other 1/3 of your fluids are considered extracellular, which means they're located outside your cells. That includes fluids in the interstitial compartment. That also includes fluids in the blood plasma. To put this in perspective, we carry about 25 to 30 liters of fluid in our body. Okay, so that's a lot of fluid for people to carry around. Only 5 liters of blood circulate in your bloodstream, and half of that is fluid. The other half is mostly those formed elements, including red blood cells. So when you think big picture that way, you think about the liters of fluid that we're carrying around. If you're losing blood, you know, losing fluids through a hemorrhage, that's a very small portion of our overall fluid that we're transporting. Down near the bottom of your page, you'll notice that water balance actually depends on several factors. Let's talk about age. Water content decreases with age. Babies have around 80% fluids. Older people have around 50% fluids. The old joke is that we prune up and become little raisins as we get older. No joke, we actually do lose a lot of our fluids. They are transformed into tissue compartments. So for that reason, older people have a really hard time staying hydrated since they have so little fluid to begin with. Babies also have a hard time staying hydrated because they're tiny. So we see the two ends of the age spectrum, the young and the old, having difficult times staying hydrated properly. All right, so males have more fluid than females. That's your next blank. Adult males have more water than females. Why the difference? Yeah, muscle tissue and they're bigger, yeah. Yeah, adult males have more water than females. Another factor is body fat. The percentage of body fat has basically no water, so your percentage of water will decrease with an increase in body fat. Okay, there's your blank. Percentage of water will decrease with an increase in body fat. back when they had those Salem witch trials, and they tried to see if the witches would float, and if they floated, what they say they were witches, you know. And of course, if you have body fat, you're gonna float. So the poor woman who had some body fat on her was probably declared a witch. Nonetheless, the more body fat you've got, the more likely it is you are gonna float. If you are lean muscle tissue and have very little body fat, you're gonna sink. So body fat, of course, contains no water. Muscle tissue, though, does contain water. And so our last one there, the more muscle tissue you have, the more water you have in your body, and quite likely the less fatty tissue you have as well. So that's why males tend to have more water than females. It's really based on that issue of muscle tissue. Do you have any questions on this page or any blanks? On the top of page 119, let's talk about water balance. Fluid intake and output are equaling about 2.5 liters per day. And you think, you know, I don't drink 2.5 liters. You know, maybe some of us do, but a lot of people don't drink that much fluid every day. But when you think about the food that you eat that contains moisture, what you drink, and what your body makes through metabolism, it actually totals somewhere close to 2.5 liters. So in order to maintain fluid balance, we have, of course, the water that we drink and eat, and we have metabolic water. And I know that you've seen in the grocery store and various places like Walmart carry metabolic water, but they're not this kind of water. This metabolic water is water that you actually make. It only is about 250 milliliters per day. It is not enough to keep you alive, but you actually make it as a result of cellular respiration. So nonetheless, it contributes to our overall water. So in order to maintain water balance, we have to talk about our thirst mechanism. So how do you know you're thirsty?
Salty,
mouth is dry, okay? Our saliva may taste rubbery to us when we're dehydrated, and of course we are encouraged to drink when we are at that point because we've already lost some fluids if we're to that level. So with a thirst mechanism, we have a sense of drinking when we feel dehydrated, when we have a dry mouth, and we also have osmoreceptors in our brain. Excuse me. Those osmoreceptors are sitting in the hypothalamus pituitary region. So if they detect a very salty blood, what do they release? Which hormone?
ADH.
ADH, good. So how does ADH work? Good. Keeps you from releasing water. And of course, that maintains the fluid and electrolyte balance that we're looking for. So why would aldosterone not be a suitable hormone for this thirst mechanism? That's it. It retains sodium, and if you already are too salty, it just makes you even more salty. So ADH is the better hormone for this job because it maintains water in balance with the sodium. I know it's a really obvious, silly question, but when do you stop drinking?
When you aren't thirsty anymore.
When you aren't thirsty anymore, exactly. And this, by the way, is a negative feedback loop. And I want to make that point because when they have these like fraternities that haze their members and they have them drink gallons of milk, gallons of water, even alcohol in excess, we are ignoring the thirst mechanism and we are putting too many fluids into our body. So looking at our list over here, well, I've only got one available for you to see. That causes a type of hydration, overhydration, called hypotonic hydration. So if you ignore the thirst mechanism and you drink no matter what, you know, whether or not your body says you're thirsty, you're going to send yourself into a hypotonic hydration setup. Let's talk about how we lose fluids. You'll want to highlight the kidneys since they are the most common route for fluid loss. Every day we lose around 1.5 liters of urine. We also lose fluids through our skin and through our lungs, but that is considered insensible fluid loss. What does insensible mean?
Can't feel it.
Can't feel it, yeah. So you're unaware if you've lost a little bit of water or a lot of water through your skin, so it's hard to detect loss. So nonetheless, we do lose it through our skin and lungs, and we lose the least amount through our GI tract. On average, every day we lose, you'll notice there, about 100 milliliters of fluid in our digestive tract. We're pretty efficient at hanging on to our water. Speaking of regulating fluid output, we have ADH and an old friend, aldosterone. It can also regulate fluids. So both of those will increase fluid retention and decrease urine output. There's your blank. ADH and aldosterone will both decrease urine output. What color will the urine be if ADH and aldosterone are in control? Dark, concentrated, yellow, okay? So if they're in control, you're gonna pee out very little urine. It's gonna be dark, yellow, concentrated. The bottom three issues, hyperventilation, vomiting and diarrhea, fever and burns, all will increase urine output, or sorry, fluid loss, not urine output, increase fluid loss.
So all three blanks are increased?
All three are increased, that's right.
What was
number 1 and 2 again? Number 1 and 2 decrease urine output. Yeah, 1 and 2, ADH and aldosterone will decrease urine output. Hyperventilation, vomiting, diarrhea, fever, and burns will increase fluid loss. All right, how about questions on page 118 or 119? Let me help you with page 120. It is a chart. You don't have to know this entire chart, so let me kind of help you work through this one. Down the left-hand side, you'll notice it lists electrolytes. There's sodium, and underneath it, it says most common cation in the extracellular fluids. I would highlight that part and know that. Sodium is the most common cation in your extracellular fluids. Go down one more box, you'll notice there is calcium. It is the most common ion in the body. I would also mark that. Notice it doesn't say cation or anion, it's just the most common of all ion types in the body. Potassium's in the intracellular fluid, and if you think about what you learn with muscles and nerves, that makes sense because sodium was always outside our cells during rest, and potassium was inside our cells during resting potential. So far, this is nothing new in terms of where these ions are located. Chlorine is the most common anion in the extracellular fluid. That should also be somewhat familiar because sodium and chlorine love to hang out together. And then I'd highlight the last thing there about bicarbonate. It is the most important buffer system in the bloodstream. Bicarbonate, most important buffer. So what does a buffer do for the blood?
Neutralize,
good. Maintains blood pH and it neutralizes imbalances. Let's look at the controlled by column. You'll notice that almost everything on the list here is controlled by aldosterone. The only exception is calcium, controlled by PTH, calcitonin, and calcitriol. PTH has an asterisk by it because it is the most important influence over calcium levels. So PTH has an asterisk by it. It has the most important influence over calcium levels. Don't worry about the function column, that is FYI. You probably know all that stuff from having taken both 210 and now almost done with 211. The last two columns have bold-faced terms. Let's take hypernatremia and hyponatremia. Hypernatremia means excess what?
Sodium.
Sodium, good. And hyponatremia means
low
sodium. So you'll want to be conversational here. If we're talking about excess sodium, you'll want to know that that means hypernatremia and vice versa. Don't worry about the symptoms listed underneath there or the causes. That is also just FYI. So you'll want to know the boldface terms relative to the type of ion that's being changed. Well, know the name of the problem, like hypernatremia or hypo, but don't worry about the causes or the symptoms.
So don't worry about like the conditions?
No, don't worry about the conditions underneath there. But you'll want to know that hypernatremia is excess sodium.
Or the hypo is low.
Right. That, yeah, be able to have that vocabulary.
The same thing with like the potassium and all, the hyper and the hypo?
Yeah, same thing with potassium, calcium, and chlorine. All right, so that actually takes us back to where we began last week. That takes us back to page 121. So what we can do Wednesday is repeat any of this stuff that you want to hear again. We can go through urinary stuff if you want to hear that again. Like I mentioned, if anybody wants to take the test Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, let me know. I'll be happy to set it up for you. Otherwise, we'll just roll with it in class on Monday. Okay, and then next Wednesday will be reproductive system overview. There won't be any time for final exam review period. That's right. That's right. All right, so if you think you might want to take it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, stop by and see me before you leave today.